This is Room in the Trees, a podcast about living a creative life. Room in the Trees is hosted by Trent Reynolds and me, Sabrina Ward Harrison.
Show notes, including pictures, links, video, and more for every episode can be found at roominthetrees.com.
If you like this podcast, please consider showing your support. You can become a subscribing patron at patreon.com/room.
Please help us grow our audience by rating us or writing a review on iTunes. To do that, you can use the link roominthetrees.com/iTunes in any phone or computer internet browser.
You can follow us on Instagram at Sabrina Ward Harrison and at Trent Reynolds Art. And now, here's this week's episode.
Well, you're in the middle of moving, right? You're packing up. This is the week.
This is the week. I am 3.5 days away.
Oh, man.
It's really great. And I'm going to have everything ready at the door when the movers arrive. Like, okay, let's go. Let's go.
And is the plans to pound it out in a day, right? There's no reason why it would.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I think it could probably be done in 2 hours with these smart boxes. Such a game changer. They're just going to still be all stacked up and then they'll just go and then they'll be picked back up and all will be well. It's been so great fantastic. To get rid of stuff and pass things on. You know, when you spend money on stuff and I'm sure you get this when you like, wow, I've spent money on that. I couldn't just throw it out. But the more you have it around and you're aware that you're not using it, you feel sort of terrible that you have it and you're not using it. So it's like, just get it, give it away to someone, trust that it will just go to wonderful hands. And it's been fun matching things with people. Like, oh, I think you, and they're like, oh yeah.
Will you call up a friend or a specific person to see if they want something or is it?
Mostly it's
you just different, imagine.
Yeah, different friends that I think have different, like my different clothes of mine. And just some girls I know that would look good in some of my dresses and some that would look good in some of my jackets and things like that. Mm.
I wonder what would happen or what the response would be if I sent like one of my shirts to a friend. Just like... Hey, dude, thought this would look really good on you. I remember those tight jeans you used to wear, you know, the brown ones, kind of roughed up. I think this would go with that really well.
Or if it was just like a random t-shirt, like a brown plain t-shirt. kind of old and weathered. Like
a little bit of pit stains in there. Dude, this reminded me of you. Needs a new home.
I dare you to do that. Will you do that? Will you send something random to somebody? That's so funny. That would be so funny to send to you, like your friend Gavin or something.
He would. I'll have to think about that. Who could I send that to? But we don't get stuff.
I know.
Now I'm like going through a list of all my friends in my head, imagining them wearing my clothes. Oh gosh.
Yeah, it's not like I sent some stuff to my nieces, that like a cool jean jacket and some tops and stuff. I love pass-me-downs. I was all about pass-me-downs. It was so exciting to have older, like a babysitter who had, I think it's a more of a girl thing, but it was always so fun to get their like pass-me-downs in like sixth grade and they were maybe in eighth grade. It was like, wow. I guess you got them just naturally because you have brothers.
Yeah. Yeah, not as cool getting hand-me-downs from older brothers, I think.
No.
Yeah, things are a little bit more beat up, I imagine. But my daughters love it when we have we'll have cousins that will give us a bag of clothes that they've grown out of or whatever, and they love that.
Are they still into cheetahs? Is it the cheetah print cat thing going on?
No, the cheetah thing has faded somewhat. They still have quite a bit of cheetah print just around. It's just not as, like, for a while there, Eden was all about cheetahs. Like she wanted to dress up as Cheetah. She wanted a Cheetah skirt. She wanted Cheetah birthday. Like it was all Cheetah all the time. Now I gotta get you a video of Mara is all about Moana. She's got a Moana costume and a little heart of Tafiti that glows.
I don't know what Moana is.
Moana is it's a Disney cartoon.
Okay.
Anyway, Moana is the central character.
Yeah. Okay.
And she's just power girl, you know, and anyway. In fact, today, Mara taped up like an Amazon box with the little necklace that had the heart of Tafiti in it. And she gave it to me. And my instructions were to go knock on the bathroom or on the bedroom door and tell Moana I had a delivery for her.
Oh my God.
And so I went there and she opened it up. It was the heart of Tafiti that she had put in there. And she's like, oh, let's go open it up on my boat.
Oh, that's so sweet. Oh, her imagination. That's great.
She's got a great imagination.
Now, do you think she's, where do you think she is on the introverted, extroverted realm?
I think she's probably extroverted. I mean, she's pretty, like, just puts herself out there with kids at the playground and seems to, like, she's always thinking of friends and, like, her favorite friends. She's always wanting to save, like, if we have a dessert, like a chocolate something or other, she'll want to save one of them for Willa. You know, Willa's her best friend. So I think she gets her fill up from, from being around other people probably.
And Zoe?
Zoe, hard to tell. She's a partier. She, and to be clear, she's not about a year and a half old. But when we have dance parties, we got this playlist that, on the Apple TV, we could just, click on the speech button, say play playlist or dance party playlist. And so we've got these songs. And when that goes on, the minute it goes on, Zoe puts her arms up in the air, opens her mouth as wide as she can go, and she starts bobbing her head. It is the cutest things. And she's got a little bit of rhythm in there. Not bad. Wow. Not bad for 1.5 years old.
Wow.
But she's kind of the golden retriever, like happy-go-lucky type feel about her. Not doesn't seem like there's as much calculation. She definitely, pushes buttons and, wants to wrestle and stuff. But Mara's got a little of the devil in her, a little devious streak that Zoe doesn't seem to have that.
Well, I remember when we won't talk forever about children, but I'm so curious about all their personalities. But I remember you actually, that same phrase as the golden retriever, you referring to Mara like that when she was younger. Actually.
Yeah. I'm glad. Well, it could just be Mara's, 3 years old.
Yeah, developmentally.
Yeah, so she's just going through that phase. Oh, that makes me a little sad. I don't want Zoe to grow out of this little partier phase.
Oh, she won't. She was, she seems like she's, when you guys came up to visit, she was just so easygoing and like, I'm good, I'm cool, I'm not, like, just so no drama. And I thought, that's instilled in your soul if you're like that. It seems like that's not going to really waver a whole lot when you're that little and you're like, yeah, throw me on your back, I'm good, we're cool, it's raining.
We'll see when it gets. It's true, though, that, there's something about 2 and 3. They start getting some independent ideas.
That's so good. It's so neat to watch human beings become human beings.
It is. It's interesting. So interesting, I think, to watch what stays the same and what evolves, what changes, what seems to have been there permanently from before since the beginning, and what seems to be stuff that can change and be malleable. I don't know. It's hard to describe specifically what that is or the distinction between the two, but there seems to be something permanent, you know, from the time they're born that persists as they go through all the different stages.
And you can't really name what, you can't really guess what that is in the beginning.
I can, you know, guess at it, but it's just this feeling that, you know, I look at Liv now and there's this feeling like she was this way when she was born. The day she was born, she was Liv. You know, she had this energy or personality, and it's, I could speculate. I could try to, you know, define what that is and what those characteristics are, but really it's just, there's like something to the whole person, you know, there's a liveness about Liv, and just like there is for Mara and Eden and Zoe. So, but they evolve like Liv, the other day, and this will be my last kid story. There's a kid that's going to be new to her school next year. And this kid's mom called Laura up, because Laura's on a list of volunteers to have a play date with this kid and just kind of, you know, make him feel more welcome and let him know what's going to be going on and you know, welcome him to the school. Just be like a good friend. And Liv just totally stepped up. She brought her yearbook. She was explaining, like, this kid's going into second and Liv's going into third. So Liv was telling this boy how what her second year was like and what to expect.
That's awesome.
You know, one of those things that warms your heart. We're just like, maybe they are going to.
Yeah.
They are learning something, you know. They're good people. Because so often we're just, you know, interacting with them at bedtime and, you know, times of day where everything's melting down.
And then we need a little story about,
so proud of her.
Yeah. We need a little story about Eden, because we haven't touched on her.
Eden is taking swim lessons, just like Liv was. And Liv is. Liv's in her second week of swim lessons. Eden's in her first. And she's no longer wearing her floaties.
Oh my God.
Eden's a little bit more cautious, and it's been a little bit harder for her to let go of the floaties, but she's actually really coordinated and does like is a good swimmer, strong swimmer. So, and she was able to go down the curly slide at the local pool,
which was a big deal. That's scary.
She's definitely the cautious one of the two.
There is a wonderful private Facebook group that everybody in the Liberate courses has access to, and so there's wonderful conversations that go on and conversation threads, and I came upon this one today and I just found it, it kind of gave me shivers. So I'll fill you in with the first comment was from Tammy. So she's talking about gathering and editing and sort of self-editing as she's going with her book and trying not to over-edit. And Paul Clark said, I usually dream of grandiosity, suffer the difference from reality, then create in furies, striving for the utmost in mediocrity. Hope for the revisions keeps me sane. Those who create always surpass those who only contemplate.
And this is Paul Clark, the Paul Clark I know, right?
Yes.
Paul, well said.
Full circle.
Yep.
I know. He brought fantastic thoughts and reflections to the group on a regular basis. It was commonly like a do the mind blown kind of like on our calls, because he really brought some great thoughts. So I'll read it one more time.
Awesome.
He says, I usually dream of grandiosity, suffer the difference from reality, then create in flurries, striving for the utmost in mediocrity. Hope for revisions keeps me sane. Those who create always surpass those who only contemplate. So that line, that last line, those who create always surpass those who, and he just has in parentheses, only contemplate. You know, that just to me is that sense of just step forward, keep going.
Mm-hmm. You know what it makes me think of is like the difference between researching and going to that city. You know, like having ideas, contemplating what it would be like to experience that city or wherever, you know, whatever experience that you might be dreaming about. And then actually making that happen, where you actually go on a trip to that location or city or have that experience, and the difference between how it exists in your mind as a potential, as a possibility, and then the reality that you ultimately interact with. And sometimes it's better than you had imagined, and sometimes it's not as glamorous or glorious as you imagine. I don't know. It seems like just the difference between intellectual and experiential understanding of things is, I don't think people appreciate.
Yeah.
I don't know how significant that difference really is.
And I love that analogy, and it makes me think about how you can think, you maybe to take off on that, the sense of I want to go to this ideal place. I want this ideal experience, and should it be this place, or should it be that place, or should it be that place, or maybe that place is better. But to dive in and just go, like, not think about the city, but go to the country and be open to explore the country as a bigger, more living organism, like, that just is, you're going to be taken, and it's going to be, there's going to be messy and challenging and difficult elements to it no matter where you go. But you keep exploring and you keep showing up and showing in, coming into the really being in the place.
Maybe another way to stretch that metaphor would be, or, you know, thinking in terms of Paul's statement here, is that maybe we have dreams of going to Europe, to going to Paris, you know, and having fancy food and seeing all the sights and museums and Eiffel Tower and all these things that we've seen in movies and heard about. But all we have the capability right now to do, all that we have the resources to do, is drive down to Tijuana. You see where I'm going with that? Is like actually going and putting yourself in action, you know, and going and having an experience, the experience that you can have.
Right.
Perhaps is better than just sitting at home contemplating the, you know, the ultimate vacation or the ultimate experience. It's like action, going and doing it, going and putting yourself in the space where change and evolution and challenge can occur, rather than just considering what the ideal might be. What do you think about that?
And that's because absolutely, and that so resonates as far as making art. Absolutely. Like, we can sit there with all our art supplies and our fancy this that we maybe, you know, anytime I buy something that's actually seems a really official art supply, I tend not to just break it open and start using it, even if I don't know quite how best to use it.
And sometimes when something is so precious to us, like the dream of song, I'm getting into this metaphor now. If you were to show up in Paris to have this vacation that you'd always dreamed of, and it was going to be the most magnificent thing ever, it's going to be precious to you, and you're not going to take, you're not going to go have a casual experience or try to do something that might be a little bit more risky or a little bit out of the ordinary or unusual, because you're trying to stick so closely to this predefined and pre-envisioned experience. You know, what we've talked about in the past, how preciousness can take the life out of the creative process. And sometimes, you know, the difference between imagining this having this grandiose vision and then trying to get to that grandiose vision, sometimes we're holding so tightly onto that grandiose vision that we have a hard time appreciating what would truly bring us joy in the process.
Yes. When I reflect and I'm thinking about my students working on their books and the part of me that wants to be in there talking and being involved the whole way with every single day with them, and it's hard to just pull back and let them, just of course I want to be involved in each one of them the whole way through. But just seeing them go through moments of being stuck, but then pushing forward, and maybe some that just keep holding back. Maybe they're held back by thinking, I don't know what I could share and shouldn't share, and just sort of getting stuff down. Mm-hmm. And I saw one of my students, I just loved, I'd see them put it in their Instagram stories, or if you follow the hashtag Liberate Course, you you'll get notified of these different things. And so the one I saw the other night was this great girl, Rachel, who's in Northern California, was gessoing her wall. She's like, yep, getting ready to go on my book.
Awesome.
I'm like, what's she going to be doing? She's gessoing. I love the idea of, like, just do the, do the book on your walls, then photograph it. And then those are pages. You know, it's like, wow, whatever works.
When Paul says in this quote, then create in flurries, striving for the utmost in mediocrity. Yeah. Like sometimes like you just like you're saying, it's like, you just got to get in, and it doesn't even matter if the result is mediocre, right? Sometimes you just got to get going, because you know that whatever it is that comes out is not the last thing you're ever going to make, or even the final version of what it is you're currently making. You know, then Paul in his quote says, hope for revisions keeps me sane. You know, it's the reality that this, it's a process. It's not just a one swing at it. And then if you win, you win. If you lose, you lose. It's like, it is going to be kind of, you know, most likely not going to be great to begin with, but that's okay. You know, that's where it starts.
Yep.
I think I've told this story before on the podcast, but I think it's worth repeating. It's one of my favorite memories because it was such a profound one for me. And that is, I had a professor at BYU when I was, you know, pretty early in my art education. His name is Bruce Smith, and one of the most fantastic, phenomenal painters ever. Really love his work. It's a lot of it's religious subject matter, but his capacity, like his technical, his skill, his craft was so amazing. And then one day I walked into his office, which also doubled as like a studio away from home. Mm-hmm. And he had a painting that he was just beginning up on his easel. And the painting was kind of bad, like surprisingly bad. Mm. It just bad because it was wonky and the composition was kind of strange and hadn't really come together. And he had moved a figure from one place to another, but hadn't gotten rid of the first one entirely. And things were just, you know, just looked kind of crummy. And there was just this moment of realization, and it was so obvious, but it profound to me at the same time in that moment that like Bruce makes bad paintings. Right. Like sometimes, and that's just part of the process, right? It's not going to stay that way. And, you know, that's how things actually get to be good is, you know, you have to work with them and work through those, you know, those kind of ugly faces of paintings. Anyway, so it's just like when I made something that was kind of wonky and ugly, you know, it just didn't feel as alarming. This is just part of it. It's part of the game.
Yeah. Don't you feel like that's such a gift when you get those windows in, or you see someone? Yeah, you just see to see that the in process.
Yeah.
And so, where are you? What kind of work have you been feeling like? If you were to address this quote and think about this quote, how it applies to your creative life right now, or professional life, or how do you respond to it?
Well, I think right now, the reality of my just circumstances that I tend to push off going to the studio because there's always so much else that needs to get done. And so it does get to a point where I just like, okay, today is a studio day, and I go in. And so I kind of resonate with this idea of like creating in flurries. It's like I go in and I've got a certain amount of time, and I just got to get things moving, you know, right away. There's just no other choice. And so, you know, if I want to make art, I can't wait for the right time because I don't have any control over what time I get, you know what I mean? And knowing that, you know, I can leave it, I don't have to finish it in one sitting. I can just push it forward. You know, if I've only got 5 minutes, I'll just dabble a little bit on this, and then I can always come back to it and continue pushing it on. But I think that's something that's been taught me just by the limitations that I have at this stage of life, is that these expectations that I have of myself can be so unnecessarily confining, restrictive.
Right.
Self-critical, just against creation, right? Like things that keep me from creating. Mm. And when you just, it's either do it now in unideal situations without having thought things through just to do it and not doing it all, then, you know, it's easier to just not have that self-critical, you know, limiting thing because you just don't have any other choice. Does that make sense?
It's like, just pick up the brush. I feel like when you're using the limit, it's like what I hear is a sense of you come to understand the rhythm and the circumstances of your life in the way that when you go in, you have to have intentional decision making.
Well, yeah, I guess it's the extreme limitation of time and my lack of control over time that has released me from any, it's just, I cannot expect to have, you know, this space and have things be perfect for me to do, to make art, right? It's just not going to happen. So it helps me just let go of all those things that I didn't realize were so detrimental to creativity, that were keeping me from acting, from doing, right? That were just like me staring at a wall, trying to figure, sort everything out that I was going to do before I started. I just start because if I don't just start, nothing will ever get done. And there's something, that limitation of time really has helped me overcome mental and psychological hurdles that have, you know, plagued me for a long time.
And so for you, how do you, what's some of your favorite ways to just start? If you were to say have a limited time, just can you play out, like, how much time do you spend? If you have, say, what would be a normal, maybe a 30-minute window or 45 minutes, how much time would you spend setting up your materials? Kind of give a play-by-play of how you would edit that time. I mean, utilize that time best for yourself.
The nice thing right now is I have the studio space, so I have enough space where I can leave things out and not have to clean things up, right? That makes a huge difference in my situation right now, because that's like, that can be a huge point of friction and, you know, for time. But I'll go into the studio and I typically try to have 4 or 5 different projects, different paintings or drawings, or, you know, this laser stuff that I've been working on is kind of one thing, and the routing and building surfaces and working with resin is another thing. And then I'll have just little drawings that I've been messing around with, all at different stages. And so there's just a lot of points of entrance for me. Like, I can go in, and if all I have is 30 minutes, I can pick up some ink and start, you know, dumping it on a drawing that I had, it was already started, and add a little bit more color or refine an image a little bit more. Or if I've got 5 minutes, right? Like, I'm on my way home and stop by the studio, I can walk in and pick up a couple paintings and just shuffle them around and stand back and look at them. You know, maybe,
that's so cool.
Maybe take a bottle of paint and just splash a little bit on there, you know, if it needs a little color. One thing that I like to do that helps me, I guess, iterate quickly is I'll have little pieces of colored tape and paper, and I'll just tape a little piece of colored paper or colored tape onto a painting to see what that color looks like in the context of the painting and how it changes the dynamic. And then if I don't like it, I just pull it off. Or if I do like it, I can come back with something more permanent like paint. So I think the point is like, and what I found is it works really well for me is just having lots of things going on at different stages. So I've got lots of options of entering in that kind of fit for different moods and different, you know, time constraints.
Just, that's so cool to hear that you could just do it when you just have about 5 minutes to just, I relate to that feeling too. Sometimes just taking that extra few minutes just to pause and just look and step back and stare can be very centering, also very grounding in the midst of your mind being on all these other things you're trying to sort of solve.
I think also going in and putting it up on a wall and not having the plan to do anything to it, just the action that you're taking in that moment is just to look and think, you know, like, instead of like just being caught up in needing to do stuff to it. Cause I know for myself, I tend to overwork things big time. So it's helpful sometimes just to tell myself, you're not going to do anything. You're just going to look and be with it for a while.
Yeah.
What about you? What are some of the ways that you get into the action of it, into the creation of it, and not just the contemplation of it.
I think mine involves a lot of liquid. When I think about it, I think, well, first of all, there's a first of all, to back up, there's the liquid part of watering the plants. I think that's a part of a ritual part for me, is like, okay, go and water all the geraniums. I've got about 12 geranium plants now going, because I've made new ones, you know, sprouted new ones from larger ones. And so that kind of centers me in the space. And then usually it involves getting some of the pieces that maybe are hanging up on the wall back down on the floor. And I usually, what I'll do is I'll roll out a large canvas roll that I continue to use as a sort of drop cloth that I let things accumulate on, and then later becomes the larger painting. Mm-hmm. But it's a nice way to just build up texture and stuff on it. And then I'll put the big paper down. I'm working on very large rolls of watercolor paper. So I can, they can really hold the weight of the liquid addition. And then I just get some ink and some paint down, and then usually slosh some water about. I just feel, I feel better when I start in that way. Don't work well. Just, I notice if I guess it, when I think about it, I wouldn't, I don't do well when I just sit down at a table with a piece of paper and a pen or something like that, and just try to start being creative. That doesn't really work for me. It needs to be much more physical and not be so dry, literally. Needs to be moist. Needs to be lubricated.
The lubricant of creativity.
Yeah, that's what I think about.
That's an interesting thought to me, to think how watering the plants might, I don't know, help you enter into the right mind space. Just like, would you consider having like a water feature in your studio? Like this, would this,
like
would this sound of water add to the, you know, the wetness, the...
Well, I'm soon going to be living beside a lake, so that will solve a lifetime of longing. But no, I think when I think about it, when I'm talking about the watering the plants thing, I think both my mom and dad, growing up, it was always something I would, my memories of my mother are coming home from school and she'd be kind of watering the garden, watering the plants in the garden and all the potted plants. And then my dad is really taken up gardening, and his garden is on a big balcony in his Portland loft, and he's just got sweet peas and roses, and he's got and big geraniums, and just he loves watering his plants. So I think it comes, and I know my sister does too with her in her garden, but it just comes with us, maybe in our family, that when I think about moments of my parents grounding and feeling, looking very, I mean, they're just very calm and contemplative. It usually is when, you know, I think about that and equate it to them watering plants.
I wonder what other kinds of just physical activities or movement or emotions that people might, I don't know, it seems like those are the kinds of adjectives or feelings that you're looking for. Like for me, I think sanding things and scrubbing things and tearing paper for me, the physicality of like destroying isn't the right word, but building up and breaking down, right? It's this kind of, I don't think my process is water or flows like water, right? Mine's definitely more dry. Although I sweat profusely.
And abrasive.
Yes.
Harsh.
But it's not like harsh, abrasive. Well, I think of like, I don't know if you know Mark Bradford's work, but he does these huge things, and they're like, he'll take knives and slice through like an inch thick layers of like paper and paint and peel off these big chunks. And like that to me feels really aggressive. Mm-hmm. Whereas with me, it's like, it's just not nearly that at that scale. You know, I'm,
but there's some force to it.
There's a little bit of force, a little bit of force. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Heft.
Yeah.
I'm hefty.
Interesting you talk about, and you're dabbling hefty,
hefty dabbler. Yeah.
Hefty dabbler. That's the title for the episode for sure.
Do you remember those commercials? Hefty, hefty cinch sack.
Yes, that's right.
Hefty.
Wimpy. Was it Wimpy?
Yeah, that's right. Good memory. I remember those commercials. Hefty. Wimpy.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, you can follow us on Instagram at Sabrina Ward Harrison and at Trent Reynolds Art.
And check out the show notes at roominthetrees.com, where you can also get in touch if you have any ideas you'd like to share.
And feel free to share this podcast with a friend, and we'll see you next week. But I'm going to get back to packing the old wagon up here.
All right. Well, I wish you well.
Good stuff. Yeah.